So I had to really use all my being and respect my ideas and not say, well, I'm just an artist or I'm just a filmmaker. No, I'm a polymath. I know how to do these things. There's a reason why, you know, my best friends are architects and doctors and attorneys and, you know, the highest of politicians on earth or this or that. There's a reason for this. This is the plate that God has put before me. So I either eat it or I stare at it and the food gets cold. I just refuse to do that. I have one life.
I'm Brian Kramer. I believe that one of the most valuable gifts you can give yourself is making smaller shifts. It's the small shifts in our lives that can create epic outcomes. Your journey to be more deeply connected into the life you truly deserve starts right now. Welcome to Humanly Possible, a podcast focused on small shifts that make epic differences in our lives and at work. I'm going to introduce our guest, who's someone I got to meet recently, but it feels like I've known him a lifetime already. When we get on, especially like this podcast, we start talking, and before you know it, I have to hit record because we realize like we're not actually recording the podcast. We've been talking forever. That's the kind of person that he is. He's Benedict Hadley, and he is such an incredible human being. You are in for a real treat. He's a prolific polymath, a filmmaker, and an artist, and he has such a way with words. So you're really going to enjoy this. His work focuses on the human spirit. As you know, I am all about humanity, and it's connection to the creator and subsequent reactions to stimuli in the built and natural environment that have taken form in works of his film, painting, public art, fashion, fashion-based sculpture, and educational programs. His work is vivid, visceral, complex, and highly spiritual in origin, as he's been called. And he's from Brooklyn, New York, where his practice currently maintains a theme that leverages a body work of and about the culture of African American youth in the inner city and aims in part to speak to and for the inner city. I could go on and on, but what I also want to make sure that you understand is that he's not just accomplished in the inner city and comes from that area, but he's also a respected filmmaker and editor who's work has been screened worldwide, namely at the Cannes Film Festival and New York Fashion Week. And his commercial art and films includes work for Jay-Z, Francis Ford Coppola, PBS, June Ambrose, John Ziesel, and Alaya Likong and the Urban League, amongst so many others. He has traveled, he has written, he has created. His art is just like moving. I saw some stuff that made me tear up. And then all of a sudden we were talking and I was like, you have got to be on my podcast, please. And he said, yes. So here he is. Benedict, thank you so much for being here. And
my pleasure.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. That's a really humbling introduction. And thank you. Thank you. Such a fantastic moment in my life to be here.
Yeah. Well, let's just dig right in. I love to do that. But one of the things that I want to dig right in on and ask you is what's one thing that felt small at the time, but ended up being a big shift for you?
So there's two points that I'd like to speak about. I think the first one was when I was, I think about 20 or 21. You know, I got a family very young, and I was at that point, I had already cut my teeth in the film world in New York. I knew that I wanted to be a filmmaker since I was a child, since I was age 7, never wanted to do anything else, worked at it, you know, was delivering art to folks at 12 on my bike with my little manila file folders I got from the discount store. Had my first internship at 12 at Reader's Digest, Children's Division in Westport, Connecticut, coming from Brooklyn to go and do this. So I was already extremely entrepreneur, directed, I should say. And, but I also was like extremely spiritual and knew what I wanted to do with my existence. Around that age of 21, I had the opportunity, 9/11 hit. And I was working for Francis Coppola at the time at American Zoetrope, young black guy from, Flatbush, going home to the hood every day, talking to my friends about this incredible, turning point in my life. And, then 9/11 hit and Francis decided to shut down the office in New York. I was running my own company, at the time between like working in commercials and music videos and working for Francis. And I was like, using all the power that you have when you're a teenager. I spent my 19th birthday getting taken out and getting totally sloshed by, Francis's folks. And it was phenomenal. And, people who are still in my life right now, not even people like family who's still in my life right now. And that feels incredibly euphoric. But after 9/11 happened, I had my daughter was on the way. And, I told the family, I said, listen, I'm moving to LA. We're moving to LA. And, the ish hit the fan. And, it was the first time in my life that I started listening to people. And that was a no-no. And it changed the trajectory of not only my life for the next few years, but geographically, working in New York instead of Los Angeles, working in music videos instead of features, working commercials instead of features. It was, proving myself instead of being accepted. And that was not comfortable, especially from someone like me who, I share the same birthday of Jimi Hendrix and Bruce Lee. And I think just cosmically, Jimmy had the guitar, Bruce had his body, I have the camera. And something about my connection to the creator and my relationship to the image and my relationship to this technical object, I am special when it comes to what I have. And it was fate. It wasn't really, a mistake or anything along those terms. It was a path that was needed to be walked. But it definitely showed me, how can I put this? What not to do and to listen to myself. And to realize how important it is to listen to your voice, to your inner voice. And, I was thinking about this conversation earlier and we people, they're afraid to call themselves a rebel or, one of the things that is actually in the footer of my emails is I'm a risk taker. And it's specifically for that we live in this world where, Rosa Parks, she took a risk. This is what it's about. And there are things that need to be fixed in this world. From a media perspective, I could, it's an encyclopedia worth of things that need to be fixed. And I stopped listening to that risk taker voice but it was a part of me. I couldn't diffuse it. I had to learn to harness it. But I think if You know, I'm still taking risks right now, but it's in such a fashion where the community embraces the risk, and not just my, you know, we live in a world where the immediate community is in California right now, you know, where it's being embraced and being respected and being accepted. And that in itself is very healthy. And I, you know, that's, it's a beautiful feeling and a beautiful thing. I think maybe in 2013, I had come back from Puerto Rico. I had shot a music video over there, and, I got to PR. It was my first time there. I was very, very excited. I was having a rough time in New York. I wasn't really enjoying myself, and, the work was just like, you know, I did some really interesting things, you know, but I just wasn't really like feeling it, you know, and I had just came back actually from Cannes, and, I had a friend pass away, my best friend who I grew up with. He passed away on the Monday, and I had to leave for the festival on the Wednesday. Got to the festival. It was like pouring rain. I'm in my nice suit. It's raining. Like, I got lost in the thunderstorm. I had to hitchhike. It was like a whole thing. But, you know, for me, I'm like, oh, God is working. This is great. You know, I got there in time to not, you know, I had edited this film and designed a lot of the artwork for a film that starred Michael Kenneth Williams, who just passed away. He played Omar on The Wire. You know, he would have arguably won an Academy Award if he didn't pass recently. He passed a few months ago. And so when I got there, I noticed that, like, you know, they weren't giving out like badges anymore, because it was like the end of the festival. I had missed the screening because I took the wrong train, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, so I said, you know what, let me go and see if a friend of mine who's a big executive over out for the biggest movie company, Canal Plus, out in Europe, if he's there, you know, because the first time I went to Cannes, he was there, and it was just a beautiful, you know, just a beautiful meeting, you know, again, just God leading the path and walking it, you know, creating the path and me just walking it. And so, and I'll get to the switch, you know, the shift. But, you know, I left this hall where they weren't giving out the badges anymore. And I go over to this Canal Plus building that they build out there. And, who do I see but my friend Olivier? And I didn't see him for like 2 years or whatever. But of course, God created this convergence. You know, my friend Deshaun Corum, who was a great musician, he had passed. And I still managed to connect myself and with myself and go out there. And nobody wanted me to go, for real. You know, maybe like three people in my life. You know, they're like, "Ah, you're crazy. What do you think? This and the other." And I'm like, "Listen, the same day you plant the seed is not the day that you bear the fruit." You know, and it was just nice to see Olivier and to connect with him. So either way, you know, I came back, and again, that was confirmation. It strengthened me on the journey to, you know, wrapping up 2012 into 2013. Went to Puerto Rico, shot this music video. They didn't prep anything that I asked for. So I went out there, felt disrespected as an artist. You know, I can definitely shoot old school, fast and dirty. But I wasn't really like, you know, I wanted to up my game, and I wanted to up their game as artists, you know, and I knew that if we could do something that was more tailored, it would be amazing. And that didn't happen. And so I came back. I felt really unappreciated. And I realized that I was writing this narrative for myself by allowing individuals to be a part of my life and not really holding myself up to a certain standard. And, so I made a decision. I was like, listen, I'm going to respect what I see in my mind. And whether that would be to really develop my extrasensory perception skills to, you know, say, okay, cool, this is the street to walk on versus not to walk on. This is the art to make versus not to make. This is the person to work with versus not to work with. And the radical things I wanted to do, like, okay, I'm going to, this block needs to be charged up with some art. And so I just started to like hack blocks that I liked in the city, you know? And so the first thing I did is I planned this block hack, over a course of a few weeks. And, you know, just like walking on the street, taking notes. Nobody knows what I'm doing. In the middle of the night, I covered the whole block with art. So that way, when people woke up the next morning, the block was transformed, and it's still transformed up to this day. And it proved my theory that you can, you know, shift things a certain way. You know, and it's like, you know, the like nuclear fission or something like that, but it's like spiritual fission. You can, you know, if you have a big enough being, you can come into a space and you can crack it wide open. And I'm not taking credit for that as a whole. There's people that build up in their spirits, and there's beings that build up to that situation. But it's important for us to know who we are and respect who we were designed to be, so that way we can come in those situations and serve it properly, so that way we can serve the unit as a whole. That changed my life. I'm still dealing with the momentum of, and it was, you know, that has, it had charts and graphs about where I wanted to be in a certain amount of time based off of where I was at that time. And I was blessed with a new family. I was blessed with a new partner. I was blessed with health. I was blessed with wellness. I was blessed with more knowledge of self, healing. And those are things that in order for me to do the work that I'm doing now, I absolutely needed. And I'm just really grateful for it. And that was, you know, very important for me.
You know, you it's such an incredible shift in your life. And when you think about being an artist, and you know there's so many starving artists out there, and all the talent that exists in yesterday's world and today's world, and hopefully not tomorrow's world, with the way that things are going, and when you look at how art is created, I'm always infatuated in how, you know, how everything is built, anything is built, you know, even construction is built when you build a building from nothing to something. But art is, everything and anything is so objective, right? Like everybody sees what they see. And that's what, you know, they either like it, they don't like it, they sort of like it, like it's up to the person to what they see. And so I'm really curious, like where you and how you create, like from what you see, and how you paint your picture, whether it's a story or it's an art piece, to how you put it out in the world and connect it to others to share that vision, to share that story, so that they can connect into and understand what you're doing. And I guess I know that's a big ask of you to do that, but how do you do that?
Well, I'm very convicted in my purpose. So that really helps. And then,
you know, do you have a purpose that, you know, you're connected into? What, like, do you know what that is?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the creator told me once that, like, I'm not giving you thoughts, I'm giving you direction. And so he had already proved in my life that if I listen to that voice, that he's going to lead me to spaces of abundance. And again, proving my theory, it's like, it's no different than, okay, I hang my keys on the wall, I know that they're going to be on the wall, right? It's just that so many people don't listen to that voice. So so many people don't listen to that voice. So they kind of numb down that ESP that I think we all have. I know we all have. And so my, you know, we live in a world where there's gross poverty and gross wealth. And so that's an issue that needs to be fixed. It's an imbalance. I don't feel comfortable being anybody's like patsy. So I was never really comfortable with creating art and just letting someone take it and, you know, give me a pittance about it. Cause I knew it was bigger than some, a validation of a company, you know, what I had to offer, because my mindset, I was born this way. So it's not like I created this person, so to speak. I was born this way. So I was given a certain amount of information to begin with. I had to respect that. And the world doesn't necessarily want you to respect that. The world wants you to think that this is the way it is. This is the way that it works. But the data says that it's actually not working. So that puts me in this seat of, well, why am I like this? Why am I seeing this? And if I believe in a creator of all these things, because the rules of this realm that we live in called Earth is creation, right? Everything is created from this microphone to this podcast to you, to me. So that must be a part of the overall thing. Even if we can't understand it, there's many things we can't understand. So I just apply that rule to what I was feeling. And I respected that. And I put the system, meaning the art world, the movie industry, and I put them in their place, which is beneath the overall system. And by following the overall system, I am able to create abundance and do what's necessary, because it's not, and I think most artists, they're concerned with, you know, eating steak tonight or the system and how they're going to be perceived, and they dim their voice down and things like that. But, you know, there's a verse in the Bible that speaks about like every person must use their vocation. And I believe that's Latin for voice. And so if you're not speaking for yourself, then someone else is speaking for you. And if you have 8 billion people on Earth and you have, say, you know, 7.7 billion with a voice of someone else speaking for them, they may have a trade that they need to do that can change this system that is going on right now. That's kind of not, that's actually not working. And so again, based off the rules that, you know, the universal rules that I was born a certain way, that I have to, you know, respect who I am as a being, it, you know, it just allowed me to, it just makes more sense. So I followed that, and I took those beliefs and those things that I saw that was wrong with the world, and I built my life around it. I built my life around changing it. I built, I decided to mine the narrative in my own life. We moved to the city, tried to get gallery space. I was like, I don't really like this. Went to one of these blue chip galleries downtown that my father had a relationship with, and they didn't get what I was doing. Got in the elevator, and the rich wives who were in Chelsea for that day were like, oh my God, we love your art. And I was like, wait a minute. I just got rejected upstairs. So that didn't feel right. And I felt like one of these other artists who was always like, you know, you create this work and you feel like a genius, and then you have to go and hold your head down and then try to sell it. And, you know, maybe you want to buy it. And that doesn't even make any sense to the overall fixing of the world, which is the real work that needs to be done. And there's, you know, you can have your cake and eat it too. You can be wealthy and you can help the world at the same time. And there's enough abundance on earth actually for maybe everyone to be wealthy if you understand what wealth really is. And so by following these things that the creator was telling me, the creator was like, paint on the walls, sell the walls. I was like, my landlord's not going to like that. But the real Ben was like, yeah, do it. And I did it. And he's cool with it. And we worked out a deal because I don't believe in the standard system. And the standard system is like crumbling in a way. So we need to find methods for how to address, say, climate change. Well, if a large part of the climate crisis is construction and demolition, maybe we should reframe what we're doing with the debris. Maybe if the debris is art and it can be put back into the market, then it becomes more of a recyclable situation instead of just... So I had to really use all my being and respect my ideas and not say, well, I'm just an artist or I'm just a filmmaker. No, I'm a polymath. I know how to do these things. There's a reason why, you know, my best friends are architects and doctors and attorneys and, you know, the highest of politicians on earth or this or that. There's a reason for this. This is the plate that God has put before me. So I either eat it or I stare at it and the food gets cold, you know? And I just refuse to do that. I have one life and, you know, that's not going to happen.
When you look at something like one of the things that you were talking about when we were both on Jeff Pulver's show, which is actually how we met, you were talking about this really fascinating project that you're working on where you you showcased with lights and you created these really fast, interesting, I think, structures in the middle of cities. Is that correct?
Well, in this particular city, what we did was we started off the model of what Hadley Broadcasting is, which is a media distribution company and production company that we project our work onto walls. In inner cities, everywhere, really, in Newark first. So we create work in and for the community, and we project it in the community, right? To fight blight, to fight the sort of downtrodden attitude that comes from a place that's not aesthetically pleasing, where you can be a young man or a young woman who maybe has some really terrible things going on in your life and can walk outside and see somebody that looks like you, 50 by 30 feet plastered over a wall. So we did that here. We moved to Newark about 7 years ago, and we, you know, got our footing here, creating some educational programs, teaching kids cinematography, you know, linked up with some local colleges. And that was really, you know, I think it was more about finding my footing as a being still. And from there, we pivoted and we made a film called Trap Cakes, which was a 27-minute film, to about the being and what the being experiences during entrepreneurship, when chasing their own dream, sorting out their life. I figured that in life is about 2% reality and like 98% in your head. And I wanted to show what that was like more, because I feel like if we respect that more, we'll learn to respect the outside more. And so, you know, I made this piece and we scored it to the Jesus is King album by Kanye. And it was 11 minutes. It's 11 tracks and 27 minutes long. My birthday is 11/27. The plots of land that we're on are all 27 that the work was created on. I didn't know that. But again, you know, things are measured. Everything is measurement and math. So if you probably measured it, I'm thinking that maybe you can measure your destiny in a way, you know, or you can actually kind of see what's working versus what's not working, just following the signs in a way. And so we made this film. It was incredible. We worked with the Urban League of Essex County, which is, they've been around for 100 years. They celebrated their centennial. I shot their centennial documentary at the same time that I was making Trap Cakes, and we partnered up with their nationwide youth empowerment program. And I created a module that would teach kids cinematic skills, production skills. And these were not just regular kids. These were kids with some major issues who have dealt with like homicide in their life, who had juvenile records, you know, heartbreaking things. You know, some of the kids had ankle bracelets on in their class, but growing up in the hood, you know, thank God I was never in the mix like that, but I knew guys that were like that. And, you know, I'm still friends with some of the guys from the neighborhood that were like that. And thank God they pulled their life together. But I never dropped them. You know, I had their back. And whether they were locked up, I would go to Rikers and I would bring them books. And I'm not bringing them, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I'm bringing them Train Spotting. I'm bringing them things that maybe they wouldn't read, you know, some Irvine Welsh, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, just taking my weird, quirky, you know, Jay-Z, Soundgarden, listening self, and bringing it to them, and just like, you know, just helping them pluck different strings in their minds, and which is what I was continuing to do at the program. So creating that film was very difficult, you know, but we managed to do it. And the young man that was part of the film, Khalif Harrington, he was 13 at the time. He was an amazing part of the film. He would knock on my door, Mr. Benedict, when we shooting the movie, Mr. Benedict, he really encouraged me to do it. And it's not easy to convince a company, a nonprofit with a limited budget to help produce a film. You know, they're not trying to hear that. And, but I had some champions in my corner, Cheryl Howard, who, you know, still has my back up to this day, and just championing the idea of who I was, what I was doing, the work I was doing in the community. And, they still didn't get it 100%, but I did it and I followed through and I made this film. And, you know, I had a vision to, you know, I realized that what this neighborhood needed was culture. You know, we didn't have anything in it that would bring downtown uptown. And so I'm a fan of Ai Weiwei, the, you know, famous Chinese artist. And he does these great large sculptures. You know, I've been following him for many years. And it, you know, a few doors down from where we live, where we shot the film at, there was this facade, this building where the front of the building, you know, I'm speaking about maybe 5,000 square feet worth of space. The front of it was caved in and it sat there for about 10 years, if not more. And it's still like that up to this day. And this is what people go through in the hood where their neighborhoods are not aesthetically pleasing until maybe they get gentrified. So what I wanted to show as a performance art example and to build a narrative was that somebody, your neighbor, you know, with the wacky hair and, you know, the beautiful wife and the beautiful kids can come outside and you can clean this spot up and you can make it world-class art. And so that's what I did. You know, invested a few hundred bucks and some cleaning equipment, cleaned it myself. And my wife shot the work and we cleaned it up. And I took these bricks that were there and I painted them all white in a special selection. I painted 88 of them. I painted them like a golden yellow. And I sourced the paint from the community through Cheryl. I painted this space and then I 3D scanned each brick and attached it to a family or an organization or an individual that I want to help in Newark. So we put those on the blockchain as NFTs. And to again, tell that story. And, you know, pardon me if I'm jumping around, but, we did that. And in August of last year, Khalif, who was in Trap Cakes, he was killed. He was shot leaving school. He was 17. And this was a kid who, you hear this all the time, and I hope that the listeners understand this, that this was a kid who was really brilliant. I know black kids. I know white kids. I know this kid. I know that kid. Not all kids are the same. And this kid was glowing with promise. And if the environment was better, I don't think how that would have happened to him. And I definitely know. And this happened the day before another kid had gotten killed. So we're speaking about a pandemic worldwide. This is a pandemic. And it's nobody cares, you know? So it really, talk about like blood covenants and things like that, like from the old days, and the shedding of Kylie's blood really made me feel like I was a part of this community in a different way. And even while that was going on, we were, you know, adjacent to this property with the bricks, which the creator was like, listen, buy this property and create it and make it like a space where world-class art can show. And don't wait until the lease is signed. Go and do it. So we painted the side of that wall totally white. And we project on that space and, we project the film, we project advertisements, project the NFTs. And right next to that space, you know, next to this wall is another about 2,000-3,000 square foot lot that we're working to secure right now that is activated with augmented reality. So you're seeing this abandoned lot that we worked on cleaning up as well, whether it be through contacting the mayor's office and staying on top of certain people to make sure it's done, or going up and picking up the garbage ourselves consistently, which is no easy task because dumping is a major issue. And you scan a QR code in the outside of this space, and whether it be work that I've created in Finland that's being released in the summer, you can see that there. Whether it be 30 pieces of couture that's being designed by a fashion house, that's being shown there. Whether it be the NFTs from the film Trap Cakes, that's being shown there. So using all my faculties to be able to create these spaces to address real world issues, to eradicate these issues of like violence that doesn't need to be there, poverty that doesn't need to be there, through technology, through storytelling, and willing to put myself in that story. Because I'm like, the actors are not working out. All right, I'll do it. I'll turn the camera on myself. I'll turn the camera on Queen. I'll turn the camera on the kids. We're going to tell this story.
So you're creating immersive storytelling using art and story.
Yes, exactly.
Phenomenal.
And, wow. And the best thing about it is that, you know, we're in talks with other cities right now to mimic the same thing that we did here in other cities. Because there's stories everywhere, you know, a story like Coda, I don't even know where it took place. And stories like, you know, there's all these stories about small towns and regular people popping up everywhere. And I want to be able to if I'm not directing, but to executive produce, write stories that take place in that tell stories about, you know, regular people in just these fantastic ways, and then show them in the city in a way where, you know, we talk about smart cities, but you can't, smart is not just about technology. You know, it's about being human.
It is about being human. I'll tell you, I there's so much to this, and it goes down so many roads. You and I, like I said at the very beginning, we have so much, man. And I knew this was going to happen. But we're going to have to do episode number two, because you've got so much content, and I just knew it. But I want to make sure everybody knows where to find you. Where's the best place to locate you?
HadleyBroadcasting.com.
Okay.
HadleyBroadcasting.com. broadcasting.com. You can find me on Instagram at kikrox.org, kickrocks.org, which is kind of my, you know, Picasso-esque blue period, red period. So I'm shifting out of that. But yeah, thank you so much, brother. I really appreciate it. I hope I haven't been long-winded.
No, not at all. In fact, it ended on such an incredible, I mean, it started, middle, and ended on such an incredible note. And I can't wait for everyone to check out the immersive experience. And please, everyone needs to look at the site, because it's just very impressive. And your work is just so thrilling, and keep going. So thank you so much. And we will have you back on again, because it's just like, that's not all. It's too much. So we'll talk to you soon. Cheers, my friend.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you so much for joining us this week. If you love this episode, please subscribe. We love having subscribers just like you. Download a few more episodes. And if you feel moved, we would so appreciate a review. I'd love to also hear your key takeaway. What impacted you from this episode? You can tweet me your answer and reach out on Twitter at Brian Kramer. That's Brian with a Y, Kramer with a K. And definitely be sure to join us in our Facebook group. We have just under 3,000 humans just like you and me looking to connect even more imperfectly. Until next time.